Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Joel Hargis, an instrument-rated private pilot who flies regularly around Florida and the Southeast for business in his Mooney. Joel is EAA Chapter 534 President and Young Eagle Coordinator promoting aviation.
Hello, I'm Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network. Pretty excited here to be at Sun and Fun 2022, the 48th annual Sun and Fun Aerospace Expo. And I'm delighted to have with me Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Boat Boswell with NORAD.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me,
Joel. Welcome back. We always try to have you guys on every year because your message is just so important to pilots out there. And so you've been with NORAD how long now?
It's been about 2.5 years. Yeah, it's flown by, literally, and figuratively, pun intended, I guess. About 2.5 years at this point.
And so the overall scope of NORAD obviously is to keep America safe, right?
Yeah, overall North America, so Canada included as well.
Right. And so, you do that from everything from people coming over the ADIS line. I mean, you scramble on that, obviously, any and all TFRs. Why don't you elaborate on that?
Sure, absolutely. So we are in our 74th year of existence. It was established in 1958. It's a bilateral or bi-national command with our partners up to the north in Canada. And we are there to protect the continental United States, the lower 48, as those in Alaska like to call it, Alaska itself, the country of Canada, and then our territories in Puerto Rico in the Caribbean. And so we, and the Virgin Islands as well. And so we are there to protect and defend all of that territory. And prior to 9/11, obviously a pretty significant event, we were primarily looking outward. And so we had a focus on, in terms of the air portion of our command, a focus on looking and using our radars to look outward over the oceans and over the North Pole and everything like that. But since 9/11, we've also now integrated an internal look as well, because obviously 9/11 proved that there are internal threats that we have to be conscious of. And so we are looking to make sure that it's a holistic defense network, protecting all assets and all territory in that same space.
So that's obviously just huge geography. And
it is.
I think the main command is still in Cheyenne Mountain. Is that still Maine?
It's still in Colorado Springs. Right? Yeah, it's still in Colorado Springs. We do have a facility in Cheyenne Mountain that we can use if we needed to, but
right.
That's primarily a emergency use kind of facility. We're now actually located on Colorado Springs International Airport on Peterson Air Force Base. It's a joint use airfield, and we have a separate building there that we use and work with our Canadian partners, as well as our Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, Secret Service brethren, and a bunch of other agencies as well, because it is, again, like I said, a holistic look at national defense.
So it's funny because I have like a stepson who's a captain for the Army, and his entire job is space.
Yep.
He runs satellites too. Mm-hmm. So you integrate that intel as well, obviously?
Space is involved as well. We talk with Customs and Border Protection. We work with the CDC. We work with FEMA. It is, a holistic look at national defense across all spectrums that you can possibly think of, cyber included.
Well, that's a lot of stuff,
man. When I joined, I had no idea. All I saw were the airplanes on the posters, and that's all I thought
right,
that was.
Right.
But it is so much bigger and broader than that, and it's an amazing operation.
So I know, it's just you guys just do such a great job to let us live our freedom that we've come to know and enjoy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But to talk a little more details, I know one of the things you're here to talk about, because we have so many pilots.
Yep.
And tons of GA pilots, and sometimes we GA pilots stray into areas that we shouldn't be.
Sure.
And so the first thing I think we should talk about is share with everybody what every pilot should do in pre-flight to avoid getting into those areas.
Absolutely, yeah. So we talk this mantra, plan, talk, squawk. So planning, pre-flight planning is probably the most critical aspect of everything that we do when we go to take an airplane into the sky. So that is simple, you know, looking, checking the weather. It's all the basic stuff like checking the NOTAMs. There are TFR NOTAMs that you can check. We hand out at our presentations here at the show a card that will give you all the resource links and everything that are associated with that pre-flight planning that we try to instill in the education portion of our program, which is why we're here at Sun and Fun. We are trying to mitigate some of the issues that we have seen from the past, which have been mitigated over time, but there we still see it on a regular basis. About maybe four or so intercepts a week is about what we're looking
that
at.
That many?
Yeah. Ebbs and flows, but that's about an average.
No kidding. Yeah. Four a week.
And up to this point, we've been successfully able to defuse a situation, and we've never had any sort of incident where an aircraft has had to have been engaged in the real world. But about 4 a week is what we intercept.
That blows my mind. And is that a bunch of that around maybe the DC TFR?
DC is obviously a big hot spot. There's that special flight rules area that we try to instill upon everybody to understand all the requirements, and it is unique in that it is a 60-mile ring that requires special training that you have to go through, computer-based training, and then within 30 miles it is a standard TFR makeup. But yes, it is a hot spot for sure. But then the other big ones that we typically look at are major sporting events like the Super Bowl or the World Series, the National Championship games, those types of things. You have fire stuff in the West specifically that are TFRs, and then presidential TFRs. And that's the real big one that is kind of the ever-evolving and moving one potentially as well.
Yeah, it's not constant for sure.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we dealt with a lot of that when President Trump was in office here mm-hmm. in Florida.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it shut down a whole bunch of the airspace, particularly around the Palm Beach area.
And now with President Biden in office, you have the special flight rules area, and then just north of that, his home in Delaware, it's a much longer kind of TFR airspace than is typically known. And so that is causing some consternation amongst general aviation pilots. And so we're trying to do our best to get the word out there, to check the NOTAMs, do the basic stuff, you know, the use of your iDevices, iPads and everything with the moving maps. Those things, as long as you're able to update those on a frequent basis,
yep.
those should be
they show them.
A very good source of information on a real-time basis.
And so you said, so you guys have a booth here?
We're actually outside this year. We're over in MD 2D. We brought our Navajo, which is an aircraft, a twin-engine aircraft that we use for training our Air National Guard pilots and our Air Reserve pilots that execute the Operation Noble Eagle mission, which is what we are executing at NORAD. We own the responsibility
for Noble Eagle.
Operation Noble Eagle, absolutely. Okay. And so we take that aircraft, and amongst others that we rent at various locations around the country, and Civil Air Patrol does a nice job at augmenting us as well. And we use those as our practice targets of interest. And so our fighter aircraft, our air defense aircraft, will go out and go intercept those slow aircraft, just as they would if they were executing a real-world intercept.
So, and you say you got a card over there that spells all that out. I wish you would have brought one of those because I'd like to. I'd like to see that. Matter of fact, I'm going to walk over there and pick one of those.
Come
up.
On by.
Although I try to stay out of that and I'm pretty aware, right?
Sure,
I do my, I do a pretty good pre-flight, but.
Well, fortunately, if anybody isn't here at the show, they can actually go to our website, www.norad/generalaviation, and you'd be able to go find and print that card off for your home use as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ounce of prevention, pound of cure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why we're here. And so we have seen a dramatic drop in the number of intercepts that have been required of us to make since we initiated this civilian aviation education and training program in the last probably 15, 20 years.
It still blows my mind that 4 intercepts a week on average.
And if you multiply that over the course of the year, 4 times 52, whatever that math is, 200 and some odd, and you multiply that by one F-16 is about $100,000 per intercept. And so $200,000 per intercept is about what we're costing right now to go intercept. So you can do the math at home with your calculators and figure out how much money it costs just to go intercept one aircraft one time and do it 52 times, and it's a very expensive
situation. And is that liability put on the offender at all?
Unfortunately, no.
It's
primarily taxpayer dollars to pay for the aircraft and the assets and the pilots that are doing all that, the maintainers that take care of the aircraft. And then obviously if there is some nefarious act or if the FBI, the Secret Service, or whomever it is that engages with the pilot that is interviewed on the ground after they've landed safely. There may be some fines or potentially a loss of license associated with it. So again, we're trying to help and protect everybody's right to fly with their certification process. But again, it takes some effort on your own self and responsibility to be that professional aviator and do the right thing.
So let's go to phase two of this, which is, all right, I'm flying, I'm unaware of where I'm at, I just busted a TFR, and you're an F-16 driver, right? Did
yes,
you
sir.
Actually do intercept?
I never hear. In combat zones I did. They're sort of similar, but not quite the same.
Okay, so I'm flying along, and my first knowledge that I'm in trouble is when there's an F-16 off my wing?
Off your left wing is typically where they'll show up, because that's where you expect the pilot in command to be sitting.
Right.
And so what you'll see is one, but there's another one about 3 miles behind, watching, shadowing, making sure that everybody is doing what they're supposed to be and following the instructions of the aircraft off the wing. But, yeah, you'll see them fly by. They'll rock their wings, and you're looking to, again, acknowledge that with a wing rock yourself as long as you see them. And then they're going to turn a direction, either left or right. If they're turning away from you, you'll follow them. If they're turning right across your nose, just make sure you're deconflicted your flight path. Safety of flight is paramount through all of this because it will be a surprising incident for sure. And then you're going to follow them whatever direction they take you. And whatever they roll out on, whatever heading they roll out on, that is the direction of the nearest airfield that you're expected to go to.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're going to take you to the ground, aren't they?
Exactly.
And so they're off your left wing. They rock their wings. Do they try to establish radio communication?
They do. So when in doubt, go to VHF guard frequency 121.5, and that's the frequency that you will expect to be talking to them on. If for some reason you can't get a hold of them on that, then you'll go back to your air traffic control frequency, the last one that you had assigned to you, and you'll try to communicate with them there. In the off chance that you are NORDO, you've lost all your radio communication for some reason, then you're going to be visual signals only. But again, 121.5 is the place that you should start out.
That makes sense. And really, if you're talking and squawking to ATC, they shouldn't let you there to begin with.
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, that's the real world.
Yeah, for sure. But there's always the happenstance that you missed a radio frequency change or something like that. It happens, and we understand that. We're not going to go guns a-blazing from the get-go. We're
going to
try to figure out what's going on, and we can see, and we can see you at a distance. We have targeting pods on the aircraft, so we can see what's going on, and theoretically, unless there's shades up on the windows, we could be able to see inside. And so if there's a medical event, again, that's an emergency situation, we're going to understand that you're going to have to deal with that first, and that's going to be a priority, and you're probably dealing with that as opposed to trying to violate a TFR.
Right. So that makes a ton of sense. And so 121.5, that's emergency frequency.
Yep.
That's good to know. And so as a pilot, follow, and that's typically an F-16?
It could be an F-16, could be an F-15C. It could be, if you're in Canada, it could be a CF-18. Or if you're up in Alaska, it could be an F-22. Just depends on where you're at and what facility is located nearest to you. But, yeah, you're going to do that. If for some reason you don't see them the first time they come by, that second F-16 is going to come by, again, rock their wings. And if you're getting too close to the thing that we are defending, the center of that TFR, that 10-mile ring, then we could potentially do our headbutt maneuver, which is not a violent maneuver. It is just us cutting across your nose and putting out flares to get your attention. Again, all we're trying to do is get your attention and have you follow us.
Cut across the nose and put out flares. That would get my attention.
I would expect it would as well for me. they'll deconflict altitude to make sure that you're not going to go in a flat spin out to sea like in Top Gun, right?
Right.
You don't want to fly through somebody's
jet wash.
All right,
yeah.
So we're going to do that. And then, we're going to lead you to a safe place, something that is, we've identified your type of aircraft. You should be able to land on that kind of airstrip. If there is a control tower, then you can possibly expect to see some light gun signals when you're clear to land. But without light gun signals at the tower or without any sort of radio communication, your clearance to land is that F-16 or whatever the fighter aircraft is putting its gear down. And that is your clearance to land on the field that should be about 5 to 10 miles off of your nose.
That's good to know. And guys, I learned that actually last year when you and I sat down
yeah.
and talked. I didn't know that when they go wheels down, that you're cleared to land. And they'll actually pull off. They're not going to land.
Yeah, right? So what you'll see is you'll see the fighter aircraft do a low approach. Again, that other one's behind you, still 3 miles, just waiting to see if you're going to do something nefarious. But at all times, like I mentioned, safety is paramount. So they want you to be safe. If there is a situation where you get a red solid light from the control tower, you're not in a safe configuration to land, you've got some other emergency procedure, deal with those procedures as you would normally without the fighter escort. And we will be there to escort you back to where you need to be. So if you have to go around, go around.
Yeah, so if you were Nordo, mm-hmm. and you're coming in, and I'm following a fighter jet, and he puts his gears down, I can tell you, I'm not looking at the tower for a light gun signal. I mean,
fair.
I'm a little consumed at
absolutely.
That point. With him gear down, I'm going to land. If he doesn't put gear down...
then you're not clear to land, don't land. Because of whatever reason, who knows? Could be unsafe.
A lot of unwritten rules there.
And it is all written. It's all in the AIM. If you want to go dig through the AIM, you definitely can, or you can go download the card off our website, and then we've already pulled those out and clarified them for you with visual descriptions and everything as well.
So, all right.
Yeah. Trying to help out as much as we can.
Well, and you know, that's one of the reasons we do this here at the network is we're all about safety, right? That's our primary mission.
Definitely.
And this is pertinent information that, because pilots, particularly once they get their license, they don't read a lot.
No, the books seem to collect a lot more dust. That is definitely for sure.
That's absolutely right. It really is. So how many years have you been in the Air Force?
A little over 18 now. Yeah, almost 18 and a half.
And you were an F-16 driver, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this job is a staff job, so I don't fly actively right now, but yeah, I did fly F-16 for about 12 years, so yeah. Goods and bads about it. My neck appreciates not flying. So.
Do you ever see any combat?
I did. I was I was in Iraq for about 5 months. About a little over 200 hours of combat time and everything. Fortunately, I didn't have to employ weapons or anything. There wasn't a need for me to do so.
Never had to engage.
But ready if obviously we needed to.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you enjoy that duty?
It had it. You know, it had its pros and cons. You know, you're away from your family. You're stuck in a foreign land and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, it was nice to finally actually go do the job that you've been training so long to go do. So
right.
that part, there was a lot of fulfillment in that respect.
Did you ever get close even once to engagement? Or?
No, I did do a lot of overwatch for some convoys transiting from one forward operating base to another, or some other undisclosed types of operations, but never actually engaged with anything. But it was nice to be able to feel like I was supporting the guys that were on the ground right there face to face with the potential enemy. So
that's awesome. I do a veteran flyer series for the Florida Aviation Network, and I've talked to a lot of veteran pilots, flown all kinds of aircraft. It's funny, the thing I hear seemed like over and over, even if they've flown multiple fighters,
mm-hmm.
the one they like to fly the most is the F-16.
Absolutely. Well, it's the best one, so it makes sense.
Well, but I've also heard that if you were going to go to engage in multiple bogeys, mm-hmm. they all want to be in a 15.
Well, they're wrong. they're confused. They must be confused.
They tell me that because of the radar and everything.
Maybe.
It's just got a little better radar.
It's got a big radar.
Platform.
It's got a big radar.
I guess, you know, it's...
We can make a lot of jokes about it.
Yeah, I bet. You know, but it's so funny to hear you defend it so.
Every aircraft has its pros and cons, and unfortunately that airplane has a pretty good reputation for success, so I'll give it its kudos.
So we got just a couple minutes.
Absolutely.
How'd you get to call sign boat?
We do a maneuver called a radar-assisted trail departure when you're trying to leave off of an airfield with bad weather and you're in a formation of, well, at least more than two aircraft. After the second aircraft gets airborne, they'll lock onto the person in front of you, and they'll execute the departure by manning about a mile and a half to 2 miles in radar trail.
Radar.
So you're locked onto them,
yeah,
and you're following around. But you're in IMC conditions. And so I'm on my third flight. I'm stationed at Misawa Air Base in northern Japan. Take off, get locked onto my flight lead, and we're off to the training airspace. I call TIED, which is the brevity term for being radar locked to them. And then all of a sudden, about maybe a minute or so later, my radar resets. It's a computer. They do that. It happens from time to time. But me as a human, I thought, man, I'm on an upgrade ride. I got to make a good impression. I'm going to get this computer to restart faster, which is, as we all know, not possible. So I'm heads down, looking at the stupid screen, trying to push buttons, flip switches, whatever I was trying to do, thinking I was going to make a bad situation better. I made it worse. And in doing so, instead of maintaining about 350 knots at about a mile and a half to 2 miles behind, I ended up about 2 miles in front of my flight lead at about 450 knots after having passed about 50 feet over top of my flight lead. So the first indication he had that anything was wrong was the sound of my exhaust coming over his head.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
So at that point, once I stopped dealing with all the stuff in the cockpit, I started to aviate again. So we always talk about aviate, navigate, communicate. Well, I did none of the three. Finally said I was blind, which meant I didn't see him and I didn't have a radar lock. And he's like, yeah, I know. I was just waiting for you to tell me. So for being stupid and not doing what I was supposed to do, I am a boat for blind on assisted trail.
That's a good story, man.
And fortunately or unfortunately, I haven't done anything worse since. So I've been stuck with this for the last 15 years or whatever it has been.
So, yeah. Well, if you'd have done much worse after that, you wouldn't be sitting here.
Maybe so. That is true.
So, you know, as we wrap up here, first of all, thanks for your service and all your hard work.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
Thanks to all those folks at NORAD that look after all of us, right?
24/7, 365. They're ready.
And for pilots out there, you know, I hope you watch this. You may want to rewatch it. Get that card. Go on the internet. Keep that with you. Put it in your pre-flight, right?
You can print it off and put it on your knee card. You'll take it with you every day.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's just so great that you come and talk and share this because so many people don't know. I didn't know. You know?
Well, fortunately, I've had a ton of great experiences, and I want to thank my daughter, Cora, my son, Charlie, and my beautiful wife, Jen, for the opportunity to come out here to talk to everybody. So thank you all so much. Appreciate it, Joel.
Joel Hargis with the Florida Aviation Network here at Sun and Fun 2022. Talking to Boat from NORAD.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.